Hello. Coaches, welcome back to the Talking Split podcast. As always, I am Rob Coulter. We have been somewhat joined there by Ash Arnott, but we are also fortunate enough to have Nathan Cooper-Brown fresh off a cross camp last week. Welcome, Coops.
Good to see you guys. I was going to do my hello then, but there's
not, not quite the same.
Nah, that's right.
Get it. And we also have Zoe Carr with us fresh off probably a barbecue. Knowing how things have been going to this point, welcome, Zoe.
I do have the spit in the car. I'm dropping it at the butcher this afternoon.
Not Good Friday, is it?
No, for Thursday, for the NBL final.
Very nice.
Making sure it's hey, we can't keep going without talking about the McVay jumper.
Oh, my goodness.
Thoughts, Coops, when it was going out of the hand?
Loved it. Shot it with confidence.
Straight off the bat. Love it. Shoot more of them.
You cannot, that's right. You cannot tell me that as that shot left the hand, there wasn't even a small thought of, no.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm an MU fan, so it was.
Oh, no. I meant, like, why are you shooting that?
Oh, no, no. I was all about it. Like, everything. Just the way he let it fly.
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah. Oh, I shot it with confidence.
Oh, it was fantastic.
That was a bit I liked. It was a shot. It wasn't a heave. He shot that. And you kind of feel like McVay's the type that probably shoots 15 of those after every practice. This is a, hey, what the hell?
Well, oh, we'll see how it before runs. Before practice, during practice, after practice.
But the thing that got me the most was the Doyle save in the backcourt.
Yep.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that. Like, that sort of goes kind of against everything you always – that whole seven-second possession kind of goes against everything you always say. But it when it works out, you look like a genius.
Well, yeah.
No timeouts for Tassie. So had it gone out, they couldn't have advanced the ball anyway. United defense gets set, all those types of things. There's a lot into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just Jack McVay, shout out to another stoic. So the fact that
he didn't seem stoic after the game.
No,
though.
No, he didn't.
You knew Marcus Aurelius.
He may not have known him personally, but he lives that world.
That's right. That's right.
But no, it's and look, he was clearly jacked up afterwards. The post game presser, but geez, he's a lot of fun. Like, yeah. It's how could anyone be unhappy for him?
Well, and the thing is too, like, that shot goes up, even if it misses, like you said, Coops, he shot it with the world of confidence. Mm. He expected that to go in. So even if it misses, you probably wear it. Like, you're going into OT anyway. Yep. So, you know, let him do his thing. And now it'll be interesting to see how it flip, like, can MU flip it in the next game, because that's a real heartbreaker, what happens to them.
Tough to go down there and win.
Oh, yeah. It's a series now. Like, it's really on. This is fantastic for basketball, fantastic for the NBL.
It is. So, just full disclosure, this podcast will drop on Thursday, provided Brent remembers to upload it without me messaging him. So, this will go out before the game on Thursday night. So, we have no idea how this is going to play out, obviously. As a little bit of sort of housekeeping, this is our last pod for a little bit. We'll be back in mid-May, give or take. We may do some stuff around under-18 nationals and those types of things, but we don't traditionally go over the school holidays. And then we've got 18 nationals, and then Zoe and I are away for three-ish weeks and very much uncontactable before anyone tries. So
email derek.best at basketballvictoria.
Exactly right. You'll probably get the same response if you email me anyway. So no real difference there, but we are off for a little bit here. We will come back with some content hopefully after that. A couple of things just straight off the top. Mike Dunlap coaching clinic last week, 164 registered coaches. Phenomenal turnout by all those at Mullum Mullum last Monday night. Great to have Coach Dunlap in town. Obviously, big thanks to Pete Lottingen and Basketball Australia for bringing him out and facilitating some sessions. The amount of feedback I've got from coaches that went to that session and said, look, loved it. Like, it was great to hear him and see him talk about what he stands for, what he will try and inspire his players with, those types of things. Really great session. So big thanks to those guys out there. Coach shout-outs in general. If you've got any coaches that you want to shout out in your coaching world, the amount of people that came up to me at that coaching clinic, incidentally, there would have been comfortably 30 others. Hey, really like the podcast, those types of things. Great. I'm sure you have a coach in your world that you would like to shout out. Send it in. Whether you want to record yourself saying it, whether you want to send in text, either one is fine. Let's just start to pay a little bit forward to some of our coaches out there, because I know there are coaches out there that do it tough week after week, and it's like, why do I keep doing this? Just spread the love a little bit would be a great thing. So if you can send those in, that would be fantastic. Lastly, Coops, how was cross camp? You're back.
Yeah, back. Fantastic camp. really excited to get up to Canberra and get on the floor with the athletes. Obviously, we work really hard to, behind the scenes to prepare and build resources and make sure that the admin side of things is taken care of. So when we finally do get on the floor, it's the exciting part. And the 22 athletes that came up to camp were outstanding. They really invested in buying into our culture that was heavily created by the group through Asia. They took on the system understanding, really moved forward throughout the week at a great rate that allowed us to be on the floor and compete probably a little bit more than I thought we were going to. The fact that we've got nationals and another camp meant that we could be a little bit more style orientated, look at the athletes a little bit more than get too focused on X's and O's and preparing for, for Turkey. The biggest issue was turnovers, which definitely relates back to, to a lot of our audience and, some bad habits from Friday nights or, Saturday mornings, a lot of turnovers, leaving our feet to find a pass, fake cuts, without pivots and pass fakes. And, we're happy with the turnovers early, especially because we're trying to play fast and a lot of those guys aren't used to playing at the pace that we expect them to. So those ones are okay. But the other ones were ones that that we need to get on top of pretty quickly. But, overall, just really pleasantly surprised and can't wait to get back with the group.
Awesome. Sounds fantastic. So a little bit of a different podcast this week, as is usually the last week of term. You kind of mail it in as a little bit as a teacher.
And we've rolled in the TV on the trolley. And
everyone's fist pumping on the sideline. I remember my Italian teacher used to do that. And I reckon we watched the same Italian film in Italian about seven times. Happened at the end of every term. Still enjoyed it. Like it was pretty good. But either way, we're going through some different stuff this week. So apologies if the audio was a little janky in a couple of the spots there. That could be a little bit all over the place. I'll do my best with this. This is testing my multitasking. This is why I'm not a drummer. I can't handle it more than anything else. But we'll see how we go. So our first clip, what we're going to do is we'll play the audio and then we'll just sort of discuss what we heard in that and, the things that we would take out of that when we're looking at coaching as well. So first one, as we go through this, we'll hit it now.
One thing. We are afraid to shoot the ball, we should go to play chess. This game is called basketball. If you are afraid to shoot the ball because you're afraid of mistakes, do something else in your life. Here, nobody will point a finger if you miss a good shot.
Okay, so that's head coach of Zalgiris, Andreas Trincieri, who is one of the greatest personalities in basketball, in particular European basketball. How much does that resonate with both of you as a coach that has had players over the years that have maybe made the extra dribble or just refused to shoot the ball in general? Like, what does that say to both of you?
For us, I mean, isn't it the definition of repenetration a great way to kind of frame why we hold repenetration so important as part of our style and system. I absolutely love that quote. I think it's fantastic. Definitely speaks to his personality. But our game is about putting the ball in the hole. And especially if, you're having a game or, part of your season, whatever it may be, where you are generating good shots, you're doing the things that are being asked, maybe creating a split, committing two defenders, kicking out, great pass on time and on target, and that shot isn't being taken and maybe it's being repenetrated or moved to someone who's heavily guarded. It's going against, the whole the whole philosophy of what we're trying to do out there. So, I think going back to like what Zoe was doing at Jamboree, I think it was last year, when I was there, because I missed this one. But, her passion and commitment to get those coaches and athletes to shoot the basketball was just outstanding, especially when you're talking about under 12s, trying to build that confidence, that understanding of what a good perimeter shot is and why we need to take it is just another example of exactly what Coach was talking about there in that clip.
I believe shooting is the master skill. I'm led to believe. I can't believe you didn't roll off with that.
And I thought everyone would turn off, and here Coops goes again.
What about you, Zoe?
I find it amusing that he's talking about making mistakes while the Macarena slaps in the background. But I think it's exactly what we were talking about before with Jack McVay. You know, we could look at that shot and say it was a mistake, but he's just sent this into a series now where they've got a chance to win it at home because he was brave enough to take that shot and he was brave enough to make the error if the shot had a miss. So, you know, we talk about development and, you know, getting outside of your comfort zone and all those sort of things. And we see kids do it a lot in practice, but once they get to the game, they just go back to old habits and go back to what's safe. And that's the thing, you've got to be brave. You've got to be able to be brave enough to make those errors to get yourself better in gameplay. So then, you know, you're not getting that sort of a bake mid-game about, you know, somebody wanting to try and draw you out of your comfort zone, because comfort zone's where you'll just stay exactly where you are.
Well, it's amazing it still happens at every level, though. Like, let's face it, this is obviously a chat that you two have fairly regularly with your junior athletes that you deal with, but this is about as good a basketball as you're going to find anywhere in the world, and they're still having to be told, hey, we're not going to yell at you if you shoot the right shot. It's okay.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, it probably plays into a little bit to we don't want to be feared as coaches. We want to be respected for sure, but we don't want to be feared by our players. And you know, he's alluding to the fact there might be some fear in the players that, you know, if I take the wrong one, you know, I might wear one. But I don't think it's the case. I think most coaches are just like, well, is it a good shot or a bad shot? Well, we'll know before it goes in. I would suggest the McVay shot isn't necessarily one they want within their offense as an example, but by the same token, well, it's one he shot with confidence. He found his space, and there wasn't a lot of space. Like when Deli's running at you the other way, you know, you got to get that thing away quickly. But the reality is that, you know, you need to shoot the ball on offense.
Well, and you look at it too, you know, you talk about kids in particular as they're coming through and there'll be times where they feel like, oh, well, that person can shoot those shots and miss them, but if I shoot it and miss them, I'm going to get subbed out and all this sort of stuff. And it's something that young athletes need to understand. It's the old, you know, you write the story when the ball's in the air. So it's a good shot or it's a bad shot before it goes in, like you said. And, you know, so that remains level. But there's also a thing in our game, and I say it to the girls, rightly or wrongly, a lot, is that everybody is treated fairly but not equal. So if you want to be able to shoot those shots and have a longer rope, become a better shooter. Put more work into your game. Similarly, you know, if you want to be able to handle the ball more, like be in the point guard position more, well, you've got to get better at your ball handling against pressure and all those sort of things. So rather than sit back and go, well, he or she gets this and I don't, that's why it's not equal, because those people probably have a better skill set than you have or are better in a particular skill set, which allows them a longer rope. So that's something I think as coaches we probably need to be a little more honest with our athletes.
Yeah, piggybacking on that, like that culture of, you know, what is a good shot, that coaching philosophy or even that coaching passion is, okay, do I want to re-penetrate on a Friday night because I want to win that game, or do I want to shoot the ball and potentially lose that game but know that that player has a better chance of getting into the EuroLeague? So what sort of culture am I establishing with my group around who's shooting, what is a good shot, what is process better than outcome, am I thinking long-term? Should all tie into those things. So again, like what you're talking about, Rob, that those players feel really comfortable that, you know, I can shoot that shot because I know it's a good one, make or miss.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we're on to number two. Hey, have we had a new Sunderland manager? Just
No, we're staying with Mike Dodds till the end of the year, thank God, because we don't just ship someone in and yeah, we've basically written the season off, which is killing me at the moment, but the injuries are just, it's so brutal. Let's get out of that quickly because I'll get very upset.
Totally different pod. Do you want us to leave the podcast stuff while we go away?
Yeah.
And you can just do your own Sunderland pod in the background.
Just do some monologues.
Like, Coops on the ones and the twos in the background, and just all of a sudden we've got like a AC/DC and ABBA matchup as he's talking about Sunderland problems over the top. But the reason I say that is we're into the Ange Postecoglou world, who is the manager of Tottenham Hotspur. Honestly, you could almost grab any clip from any press conference he's given over the course, but we've gone with this one today.
Well, they've all got freedom, you know. There's no, you know, we're very structured, but hopefully it doesn't look that way because, you know, we've got guys. I mean, we had Pedro Porro centre forward at one stage a couple of times today. So, you know, that's, that's part of hopefully us being a, you know, really good team, an effective team and hard to stop is that, you know, what is a rigid structure looks very fluid because guys understand, you know, that as long as there's movement out there, they're looking for spaces and other guys are filling the spaces they leave, then it doesn't really matter where they pop up or where they go, you know. So it's, but there is a discipline within that, you know. It's not just about sort of running anywhere. It's about going to the areas where we work on constantly and you know, if it looks fluid, then, you know, that makes us harder to stop.
Fluid rigidity. Put it in the book now. We are using that again at some various stages. Look, for those of you that aren't involved in that football world, obviously there's some terminology in there about positional and those types of things too. Take that aside. The concept of hopefully it looks fluid, you can go wherever you want to go as long as someone pops up in the right spot at the right time and work on areas that we work on. That's coaching.
Well, if you're not into soccer... I enjoy soccer, but I'm certainly not across it the way you two are.
Football.
Well, I call it football and then you say soccer because people don't know it as football.
Just refer to it as football. Last time you stung me on this, so it's only fair I give you one back.
Anyway, think of what he's talking about as like a press breaker. So understanding the space, where to get to, cut to, get out, somebody else get into that, you know, the middle, down the line, across, you know, or behind the line of the ball. Think of it like that, of that constant movement and filling those gaps. And that's effectively what he's talking about there. But in gameplay, like, that's huge to be able to have that in gameplay, to be so structured and have such an understanding, your athletes having such an understanding of what you want, but it looks like it could be just anyone, almost anywhere. Yeah, like imagine scouting that.
Yeah. Well, and you honestly, you think back, not that most people on this pod would have probably been aware of it at the time, but the Barcelona teams back in the 2000s effectively when Pep Guardiola was coaching them, like that tiki-taka style of play where it's just like ball moves, and there are people that are just like turning their head constantly playing defense, and it's like, where is the ball? Like, what? Where is my player? They've tracked a run behind. How can I see that? Because that's not normally who would be there. They play with different alignments. They have, you know, right wing backs and those types of things that, well, actually, that's as much as you're playing in a back line, you're still an attacker at that time. And just the ability, I think, the important thing I take out of that personally is just the fluid rigidity. We want structure, but it doesn't mean you're pigeonholed into one role only. Like, have you seen much of that? Like, I know you're the offensive guy, Hoops. Like,
he's all about D now, didn't he?
No. He's still,
were you not in that
guy,
meeting?
Still very much the offensive guy. Is that something that you try and create with your teams? It's not a one size fits all necessarily, but it is a one system for all that you can play in multiple spots.
Yeah, very much so. Like, that's exactly what we're trying to do at the moment, both you know, from a program standpoint, from a team standpoint. The idea is to give the guys and girls some structure for them then to be able to utilize their strengths and their creativity and their reasoning based on the defense to have success. And one of the big things for me hearing that is the word discipline. And it requires much more discipline to play with that kind of freedom and fluidity than it does a more structured, you know, system, offense, defense, whatever it may be. Because, like, if we're talking about it in football terms, not everybody can just run over the half and want the ball and want to score, because obviously if you lose possession, it's one pass over the top and, you know, the goal is in a lot of trouble. So that understanding of when the triangles change or the pattern of movement changes and all of a sudden the defender has come up to fill in a triangle to maybe open something up, Well, then someone else, potentially an attacking midfielder, now has to move to cover that space. So you've got to have that chemistry and that discipline and that understanding of, okay, I'm backing Rob now to make a decision on that split cut, but I know that those guys are going to need space. So I've got to hold this weak side wing as long as I can, or maybe exchange with the corner to shift the tags to let those guys have the freedom and creativity to operate. I can't just go running over there and try and get the ball in my hands as well. Knowing that, I'm probably going to have a chance to utilize creativity and freedom in space later on. Or importantly, if those guys take a shot, I know I've got to get back and cover D-Trans. So it's a fantastic way of playing for the athletes. It's, again, what Zoe said, it's really hard to scout. And then it forces you to have a really strong culture and chemistry around backing each other to do those things and kind of cover each other's backside.
I think also too, though, one of the things that comes out of that for me is everyone has to know everything. Like, there's none of this, oh, I only know the five. Like, that is one of the most infuriating comments for mine. Like, I understand you may only play that position, but you need to know all five positions. You know, need to know where the ball is, where you could get it from, where you could, what would be open once you get it, who's going where and why, all that sort of stuff. And I think in that sort of a, like you said, the discipline, Coops, of knowing everyone's position, you'd have to, because there's no set that the ball's going to go here and then we move there. It's the ball could go here, someone could go into that. Now you've got to go into their spot and you've got to know what to do when you're there.
And you've got to be brave as a coach to let your players play that way too, because I think a lot of coaches, we want control. So consequently, it's like, I want you to run this half-court set to get that shot for this person. But the defense doesn't always give you that. Well, so you've got to allow some control over your players.
And in juniors, that will work.
Yeah.
Like, that will absolutely work. That will get you wins and it'll make you feel good as a coach. And I also, I know I sound very judgy right now. I'm going to remove that from my tone.
No, very easy to be in that hill.
But I also very much understand that because of the pressures that coaches are under from association land, from parents, from kids themselves, all that sort of stuff. So I get that as well. But my thing is that, yes, it works, but are we making them better? What sort of system do you think is making them a better basketballer? And for mine, read and react. Anytime you force them to make genuine decisions, you're making your athletes better.
Well, and you bang on, because what's going to make them into a better basketballer? Running an offense that will probably work for that team at that point in time for that year, or something that will pay off long term. And that's the problem, is that in a lot of cases, we don't see the payoff in the short term. We make snap judgments of, is this player very good or is this player not good enough to make this team, whatever the case may be. Okay, they may not be now, but can we put enough structure and systems around them that will bring out the best in them to be a future player? Yeah. And that's the hard part, is seeing the long term and not just, oh, this player is better than that player now.
You know what I think would help that, though, and something I know I regret not having done this when I coached under 18s women and we made a grand final. I should have called their under 12 coach and thanked them for what they did, and their under 14 coach and thanked them for what they did, and their under 6. Like, I should have done that.
Coach shared it, you say?
Yeah, no, seriously.
No, if only genuinely, there was a podcast that was asking for coach shout-outs we could put that on, that would really help out.
This was also over 10 years ago, so let's just back that up a little bit. No, but
podcast weren't a thing back then.
But if, I think if we made that a thing, then it might relinquish some of this angst to, I've always just got to get wins, and, you know, if there's the recognition. Yeah, there's the recognition. That under-18s coach or whoever it is has called me and said, you know, thanks for what you did with them, because I got to reap the benefits of that, not you. And, yeah, I'd like to see that happen more. It's one of the regrets I have in that moment.
Yep. If a director of coaching surveyed all their athletes, I would argue there would be maybe 2 to 5 kids would say that playing in the under 16 VC team was their goal, their aspiration, the top of the list of things they wanted to achieve in the
great
game.
Great point.
It's not. It's not. These kids want to play in the NBA. They want to be Opals. They want to be Boomers. They want to play in WNBA. They want to go on and experience whatever they can at the highest level. And when we don't put that first, it's a huge disservice to them and it's selfish.
Yep. Great point. We'll use that on a podcast in the future somewhere. We're on to the next one. Becky Hammons. This is from her Hall of Fame speech. I can't even tell you what year it is, but you'll hear it in a second.
You're a man of principle and excellence. I know you weren't trying to be courageous when you hired me, but you did do something nobody else in professional sports has ever done. You display excellence, you expect excellence, and model how to become excellent in your everyday routine and how you go about your work. You spoke courage into me with a phone call as I was getting ready to coach that first summer league team in 2015. You said, just be you, you're gonna be great. And you've texted me that. I don't even know if you know how many times you've actually texted me that. Just be you, just be you, just be you. And you've changed the trajectory of my life and of so many other girls and young women. Thank you, I love you.
So that's Becky Hammon talking about Greg Popovich in particular at her Hall of Fame speech. Zoe, as the only female coach in the room, what does that sort of resonate with you, I suppose, more than anything else?
There's a lot to unpack in that. I love that she used that something about her to show gratitude towards somebody who, like she says, you know, you weren't trying to be courageous, but I remember when that happened. I remember when he hired her and the rhetoric that came with that, that was just disgusting, about having hired a female and, you know, she won't know what she's talking about. She won't be at the level. And that sort of stuff doesn't come from people who know. Like, it doesn't come from other good coaches. It doesn't come from good players, because it's mainly from men. It comes from the dude that sits on his couch and has zero athletic ability and probably plays Fortnite, you know.
He's on 2 out of 3 on that.
8 nights a week. I'm in a bit of trouble. But that's who that comes from. But it's there, right? So to use that something that was for her to show gratitude to him, I think is just wonderful. I think Pop being a leader in that space and saying, hey, she knows what she's doing. And he didn't pick her because she's female. He picked her because she knows what she's doing. She's talented. She's experienced. She's like a hard worker. She's all of those things that you look for in a coach. So see, he saw a coach. He didn't see a male or a female. And he grabbed her and he gave her that opportunity. And whether we like it or not at the moment, we as female coaches, we need male allies to help us through the journey because we are so severely outnumbered at this stage. So we do need, and whether it's as mentors, as assistant coaches, as, you know, just friends, as whatever it is, we need to, you know, tap into that that wealth of knowledge and use it rather than kind of shy away from it, which I think we tend to do a little bit. It's kind of in our DNA to sort of, if we're in a room with a bunch of men, we'll sort of sit quiet and not step up and say, hey, I'm here. And I think that is a brilliant example of one, being given the opportunity, but then two, just grabbing it with both hands and becoming an unbelievable trailblazer in our sport and somebody that not young girls can look up to regardless of sport. Like, they could be football, netball, you know, whatever, play whatever they want. But here is a female coach who stepped into the highest level, and she not only held her own, she gained the absolute respect from players, other coaches. She showed that she was up to it, and it was just, yeah, it was massive. So I could talk about this probably for the next 45 minutes, but I'll let Coops have a go at it. But But yeah, I just love everything about it. And I know sometimes there can be a bit of a narrative of, oh, you know, the female, you know, talking about a male, and I get that, but it's not really about that. It's about a coach showing gratitude to another coach who gave her an opportunity.
Opportunity is the big one for mine. It's, you know, coaching jobs are hard to come by at the best of times. If you manage to get one, you're generally not bad. They go and get the right people for it, and I think this is a great example of, yeah, Pop gave an opportunity, but he didn't just give an opportunity for tokenism.
Yeah, she had to work.
She's like, hell, she had a hell of a career as a player. Yeah. Like, she was elite. As a player, and clearly a very good coach.
Yeah. So I remember watching a clip, or like a small, I don't know if it was a 30 for 30, but it was like a small little doco between games. And it was on her. And she's at practice, and Pop's talking about the first time she actually sort of stepped up and started to really sort of flex her muscles a little bit. And I can't remember the players' names, but there was a guard coming off an on-ball screen, and he just kept turning the ball over, and, you know, the guard's yelling at the big because, you know, the big's not catching the ball, and the big's this and the big's that. And she just walks over and she's like, have you asked him where he wants the ball? And he goes, no. And she goes, well, maybe you should start with that, and just walks off. And then he follows her and he says, well, what do you mean? And she goes, I can see from here you're placing the ball at chest height. He doesn't want it there. He wants it above his head. Throw it up there and see what happens. Comes off the on ball, dunk. And it was like, and you saw this collective, not that they didn't sort of trust her or rate her in the beginning, but you just saw this
bit
like
of a smirk about it. It's like, yeah, oh, she does know.
Yeah, and a little bit of a, yeah, shit. Like, you know, like, but it was so cool. It was really cool to see that. And again, it was like, I don't know, you see these sort of things and you see female coaches, you know, blazing the trail, and it just, it ignites, it and if it doesn't ignite something in you as a female coach to want to, and in any situation, you could be coaching in the WNBL, you could be coaching under 12s. But if that doesn't ignite the fact that you want to be a role model to other young females, athletes, coaches, whatever, there's probably a little bit of a problem there.
Yep.
I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't double down on what you guys were saying in that incredible person, incredible coach, took the opportunity with both hands and is obviously being rewarded now for her hard work, her passion, her discipline. She's a fantastic role model to all coaches, male or female. Shout out to Brian Gorgian and Laurie Chiswick, because well before Becky Hammond was hired, Gorge hired Laurie Chiswick as a female assistant with the Victoria Titans in the NBL. And it was a fantastic opportunity for Laurie. You know, Brian, again, saw her as just a great coach to bring someone on board, different voice, different perspective. I had the opportunity to work under Laurie in that space, like being there. And, yeah, the way that she operated in that environment, again, a very, you know, masculine environment, was awesome. And that's where her and I got to know each other quite well. And I really appreciated being coached by her. So there's a lot of things like that that have been happening in our sport that I think probably need a little bit more attention. Yeah, as we go.
And I think, like I mentioned before, there's always going to be, this is probably a bit of a call out to the female coaches, there's always going to be that horrible stigma that comes because of someone somewhere thought it was a great idea to have quotas, and all it did was undermine anybody who does the work. Like, I understand, I really enjoy the narrative of let's get more females involved and all that. I very much enjoy that, but quotas just absolutely kill me because of what it does. So head coach hired, female head coach, whatever it is, instantly, oh, it's because she's female. Now, at the end of the day, my thing is it doesn't matter how the door opens. Bash through the door, do the work, and prove that that's not the case. Because, you know, I know when I got this role, there was a lot of that. Oh, she only got it because she's female. And maybe that's true. I don't know. I wasn't in the hiring process. But at the end of the day, I've worked my butt off every day to make sure that my program's getting better, my coaches within it are getting better, and that, you know, I deserve to be here. And yeah, I think it's something, don't be afraid. Don't let that narrative deter you. Like, use it. Grab it and use it.
Well, to be honest, ask for help too.
Yeah.
Like, if you are concerned about that, there's enough good coaches around that I think have proven over time that are very trustworthy and empathetic to what people go through. Ask for help. And if you don't know what your pathway can look like or who to go to or anything like that, come and ask us. We'll happily help you and do as much as we possibly can for you.
Probably the last thing for me quickly, Rob, just on that was, you know, hearing how many times Pop was saying to Becky about just be you, just be you.
Absolutely.
And the power of, you know, being authentic, being an authentic person, being an authentic coach, having strong mentors and people with a reputation like Pop just to say, hey, just be you. That's the best person you can be. That's the person we back you to be. And I hope everybody takes on that advice.
Yep, absolutely love it. All right, we're on to the next one. So the next one is Benji Marshall, who's the head coach of the West Tigers in the NRL. The audio at the start's a little bit glitchy, but you'll pick up the gist of what's going on as you get through it.
Yeah, it's annoying because it's not true. It's as simple as that.
You make no apologies, though, for not being a 24/7 coach.
What's a 24/7 coach?
Blokes that get live and breathe, sort of go to bed.
Who says I don't? Who said I don't?
I don't know.
I'm asking you. You said 24/7.
Assuming 24/7 coaches are coaching.
When do you not sleep?
4 o'clock in the morning. I slept like a baby.
I was up at 4 o'clock this morning.
Yeah.
So, what are you asking?
Yeah, but I take it it's the modern day coach. You don't have to do. I mean,
what's the modern day coach?
Longer hours is not necessarily better. Is that the case?
I come into work early before the players. Work as hard as we can until we get what we need done. Then we go home. Because I prioritise my family between 5 and 8 p.m. every night to find a work-life balance. That doesn't mean I don't care about my job or care about working hard. I don't get it.
Could be paving the way for the next generation of coaches.
I've done nothing in coaching, so I know where I stand. And I'm not trying to pave the way. All I know is when you get a job like this, you want to do things to a certain standard in a way. And I've been coached by some great coaches who do different things, and I want to do things a certain way, but it doesn't mean I don't work hard.
All right, so full context, Benji Marshall is obviously a fantastic NRL player in his own right that has now moved into the coaching stratosphere, for lack of a better term. There's been a little bit of talk around, because he's got a bit of a rule in place, between 5 and 8, don't be doing work. That is family time. That's when you're doing like school pickups, drop-offs, events, like extracurricular stuff, like all that sort of stuff. Be with your family in that time. Coaching is such a stressful job. You do need to carve out time for it. He's probably the first one that I've heard of that has said between that hour and that hour, though, do not be doing anything work-related here. I think we all know our job doesn't finish when we walk out the door. It continues, whether it's mentally, whether it's physically, whatever the case may be. Finding the balance between the two is near on impossible. But it's kind of refreshing to hear that, well, you know what? I'm going to go away towards getting a bit of balance with work life in that space. And I'm going to say, well, no. We're not doing anything this time. There's no expectation for you to be on the clock, so to speak, at this time. We get done what we need to get done, and then we move on from there. I found that really refreshing because I think there is almost an expectation. And whether it doesn't matter the level you coach, we are expected to be available 24/7, it feels like at times. Whether it be a player wants an early morning workout, whether it be a parent wants a chat late at night, whether it be you need to go and wander into a committee meeting and talk about whatever the case may be that are usually outside of hours and those types of things too. We're all human. We all need time to just be able to decompartmentalize a little bit and just sort of say, actually, this is not what's important right now. I need to focus some attention towards my family because, and we've spoken about it at length on this, if the home life is not organized and settled and working smoothly, the work life absolutely will not be. It's a really big thing. So credit to him. And he's copped some heat for that, to be honest, with passionate supporters that are suggesting you're not doing the work. And you know, there haven't been massive results yet, but he's a new coach that's still learning. And I love the fact that he recognised that. Hey, I haven't done anything in coaching. Like, I was a player, but I haven't done anything in coaching yet. I'm still learning. That, for me, is such a refreshing take of the I don't expect to be good at this straight away. I'm finding my way in all of this as well, rather than I used to be a player, so now I'm a coach, and I'm just good at both. It doesn't work that way. So, Coops, what are your sort of takeaways from hearing that?
Yeah, so much to unpack in that. The modern day coach, it's fantastic to see that, you know, however you want to frame it, if the modern day coach is the person that's a lot more cognizant of the holistic approach to coaching, which includes what my home life is like and what support network I have around me. Obviously, Cody Royal is doing some fantastic stuff in this space, and there's some literature and different things and podcasts that people can go and if they want to dive a little bit deeper into it. One of the things that I liked there too hearing was if I've done the work, you know, so how much is that, you know, 25th hour of tape, you know, going to help you if you've done the work, especially when we've also been talking a lot about in recent years, and you look at the NBA, you look at international basketball, a lot of the narrative now is strip back. How can we make this more simple? How can we make this more digestible? You know, one of the things we've been talking about in Green and Gold is load, you know, and how can we find a better balance within tournament play, and how can we keep the athletes fresh and get them to the point where when it is time to work that they can really lock in, digest the information that's needed, go out and perform at a level, and then again be able to switch off. And it's the same as coaches. You know, be able to sit down, have a clear plan, you know, WMI, Brett Brown, what's most important, prioritize those things, get those things done, and then be able to switch off. Charge the battery, be with your family, enjoy your hobbies, you know, those sorts of things. As we know, coaching is, you know, you get hired to get fired. So it's not like this thing's going to last forever. You know, you want to have some sort of a life around there. So anytime I hear a coach like that being brave and prioritizing family, importantly, prioritizing family for their athletes that also may feel a little bit squirrely about, oh, you know, should I stay and get another weight session in, or, you know, should I go and pick up my little one? Anytime a coach is willing to stand up and fight for other coaches and athletes to give them more of what a life should look like, I just think it's fantastic and I applaud them.
And I think there'll be times too where even between that 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. window, the intrusive thoughts start to creep in. It's like, oh, should we have done this? How do I plan for that? But you're never going to be completely tuned out to it. But just knowing that there's a window where your kids can get to you, or your partner can get to you, or your friends can get to you, whatever the case may be, it's like, hey, if I get them between that window, they'll be available, they'll be present, they'll be engaged. That, I think, is actually really important too, because it's also a nice signal to the club that may feel like, hey, we pay you, so we have access to you 24/7, to say, well, actually, no, you don't. Like, I do my job, I do what I'm supposed to do, but I'm not at your beck and call necessarily, and they can schedule meetings around that. Well, okay. Between 5 p.m. and 8 p.m. you can't get me, but at 8:30 you can. So what do you need? Like, it's that kind of thing. So finding that balance between the two is just, that's an important part of it.
Another good one there too, Rob, from our friends in Stoicism, is the journal. So yep. If it is between 5 and 8 and one of those thoughts pops into your head, quickly journal it. You know, it could be in your phone, whatever it may be. Just note it so it's out of your brain, but you know it's there for later and you can put it aside rather than just sitting and stewing on it.
Yeah, really like it. What about you, Zoe?
Well, I love it. I think it's probably something we should adopt in our house.
No worries. I'd love to not work between 5 p.m. and 8 p.m, but it just means that I now start working between 9 p.m. and 12 p.m.
Are we saying more barbecue and more FIFA? Yes.
Well, if only that was the rule.
This sounds amazing.
But I think I'd like to look a bit deeper into it, because I love everything and Coops has covered it. You've both covered it perfectly. I'd love to be able to change the mentality of the person, which he won't be the only one asking the question, because I'd question if they'd won every – I don't know how many games they've played this season so far, but I would question if they'd won every game whether that question had been asked. Yep. And – great point. I think that's...
Oh, it'll be the new model moving forward that everyone should adopt. Everyone would adopt, yeah. You know, we all know that we're trendsetters.
That's right.
And that's the issue for me, is that, you know, it's this the same as, to bring it back again, the Jack McVay shot. Write the story in the air. Like, is it okay if you're winning? If you start losing, why would that change? Why would that all of a sudden not be okay? And I think that's a real problem that we have, particularly here in Australia, of, you know, we're quite fickle with our sport.
A bit tall poppy issue.
A little bit. Mm. And we're looking for a way to blame someone and cut someone down, and something that's different, because it's different, it must be wrong. And it's, yeah, it'd be a really nice sort of mindset shift that I'd certainly not the person to get it done, but I'd love for it to be something that, you know, well, let's wait this out and see. And at the end of the day, if he doesn't get the results, well, it's professional sport, he'll probably lose his job. But if he's getting the work done in the time, like, why take 10 hours to do something that can take 2? I don't understand. That just says stupidity to me. That doesn't say commitment.
Yeah, just duplication of resources to get pretty much the same outcome, really, isn't it? So, yeah, I think we can all be more efficient in that one. So next one, we're going to punch through a couple of these because I've realised how long we've been going for. And I'm conscious that you both have a meeting
part
coming
two.
Up. Yeah, well, a very real possibility, it turns out. We will skip over a couple of these and we'll see how we go with time at the end. So this is Jannik Sinner, who won the Australian Open this year.
I wish that everyone could have... my parents, because they always let me choose whatever I wanted to. Even when I was younger, I made also some other sports, and they never put pressure on myself. And I wish that this freedom is possible for as many young kids as possible. So thank you so much for my parents.
Crazy good, like crazy good. How much I like that, in all honesty. Number of reasons. I'll let you both go first and I'll pick up any pieces that are left over at the end of it. Zoe, you were nodding away as we were, so we'll go with you first.
Well, it dives into a few things when we talk about early specialisation. Doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be better in the long term. It actually, the data shows that's not the way to go. Yeah,
burnout happens.
Yeah, so, and just allowing him to find the sport that he loves and wants to go further with, because at the end of the day, you can't be elite in anything if you don't love it. Like, you just, any sport at the elite level just demands too much from you. So if you don't love it, you're not going to get there. You're not going to do the extra work, or you're not going to, you know, the alarm goes off, you're going to turn it off and roll over, you know, all that sort of stuff that you can't do. But if you love it, you're up. You're in the gym, you're recovering, you're eating right, you're maybe missing parties and things like that to go to games and all those sort of things. So I think a really good message out of that is, whilst we may have hopes and or people may have hopes and dreams for their children, they have to be their kids' dreams. Otherwise, they're not going to be successful in it.
And I think that's the important part is, and it's the same with coaches, because I don't think it's grossly dissimilar. You're trying to create good basketballs, for sure. We all get it. But your real job is to get your players to fall in love with the sport. And if they fall in love with the sport, well, everything else becomes so much easier. That's kind of my take out of it. What about you, Coops?
Yeah, you guys have hit the nail on the head. I can't reiterate more. If the people that go on to do special things in sport or anything, music, art, whatever it may be, it comes from an incredible deep-seated love and passion. Without it, they won't do that. So what are you doing as parents? What are you doing as coaches to help foster that love of whatever the activity that the child may have? And that's such a massive responsibility for us.
And knowing along the way, your kids will take some hits. They won't make something. And what is your reaction to it? Is your reaction to, yeah, that coach sucks, they don't know what they're doing? Or is your reaction, okay, this hurts, get it. Let's ask for some feedback. Let's see what the feedback is. Let's go to the people we need to go to try and action this feedback, and let's see if we can change it for the next time that it happens. Like, there's ways to put some support around that, which I think are important. Our next one is Kara Lawson, who's the head coach of the Duke women's basketball team.
We operate in reality in our program. So when we fall short of something, I just tell them. I tell them it. I don't sugarcoat it. I'm not mean about it, but I say, hey, we're not good enough in this part of the game yet. And they're nodding their head because that's what the conversations are. And early in the year, we would talk about, like, we weren't good enough, or we weren't ready enough, or whatever it was to be able to win these types of games. And we had so many games that we lost like this. and we would be honest with ourselves about it. Because I think when you experience failure, you have two options. You can either tell yourself the truth or you can lie to yourself. And what happens when people fail, they'll lie to themselves and they won't address the issue that's actually causing the failure. We don't want to do that in our program. We want to address the issue that's causing it. We want to tell the truth to ourselves and say, hey, we fell short here. Here's where we need to be better. And then my job as a coach is to show them and teach them how to get better. Not just say we're not good enough. My job is to help them see and help them grow in those areas. And so this is why you coach, man. I mean, to see that growth and now on a bright stage to be able to see them overcome something that we struggled with during the year. It's really, really satisfying.
I could listen to Kara Lawson talk about stuff all day.
Like, have you heard her one about like things getting easier?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's if you haven't heard it, just Google that. Yeah, it's and on YouTube. It's insane.
Yeah. She is a great speaker at the best. And look, don't get me wrong, this is a fun time of year anyway. We got March Madness rolling through and there are press conferences every 2 seconds and really season and career defining legacy moments for a lot of people. So they obviously have to talk to the media a lot more. But her stuff is always really good. And I love in there she's talking about being honest. And as coaches, we can sugarcoat some stuff a lot. And sometimes we need to. It might be a bit of a bitter pill to swallow on whatever's going on. But at the end of the day, honesty will help more than a Band-Aid will over what's potentially going on. And we've spoken about it at length, I think, with people that are like skills trainers and those types of things. And it's like, oh, they just tell the players what they want to hear and they don't necessarily work on getting them better. Well, sometimes they need to hear that they're not good enough at something. They don't need to yelled and screamed at them. They just need to be told it and then left with it. Well, okay, now it's yours to go and rectify and let's see what happens from here. So I think that's a fantastic message personally. What did you sort of take out of that one, Coops, from your end?
Three things for me. First one was awareness, self-awareness, situational awareness. The second part was relationships that can bear the weight of truth. And then the third part is being solution-focused. So do you have the awareness to identify the things that you need to improve or the situation with the team and what they're struggling at? You have to be honest. You have to be honest with yourself. You have to be honest with the people around you. But you got to create relationships that are going to be able to have those honest conversations, because if you don't, that you can fracture really quickly there. And then it can't be left there. You need to come with a plan and you need to come solution-focused around how we're going to address the things that we've identified to move forward. And yeah, hell of a coach and could definitely listen to her all day as well.
Oh, dead set, Coop. You know how much I love Liz and you've just nailed that one with her, like three off the bat. You've smashed that. What about you, Zoe?
Well, there's not much left to take out of that because that was just bang on, Coops. I suppose the last thing I took out of it, and again, it might just be the softie in me, I loved hearing the shift in her voice when she started speaking about when a team overcomes things. And that's why you coach. Like there was a genuine at the start when she's talking about honest conversations and those
didn't
sort
go
of
well
things.
The start of the year,
and she was just she was real process. And then she starts talking about, you know, and then that's my job as a coach to get them better. And then that's why you coach. And there's a real shift in her voice, and it becomes almost about love again. Like, you know, it's that, you know, this is what I enjoy doing and this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And yeah, I just, again, it's the same for coaches. If you want to get to a higher level, you've got to love it, because if you don't, it'll wear you down and you'll be, and spit you out, really.
Absolutely. All right, we're on to the next one. Now, this is a little bit of a long one. Unfortunately, you can make the call on whether it's a good or a bad thing. This is Padraig Harrington, who is an Irish pro golfer. Not going to try my Irish accent out at the risk of offending and starting multiple world wars, but he can take you through this one.
How did he catch the bug of playing golf?
I don't necessarily know. Golf's always been easy because I have the facilities at home. So I would say to a lot of people, you think providing these for your kids is good, but not really. You know, when it's easy for kids, they just tend not to want to do it. So in hindsight, the best way if you want to get your kid into the game of golf is bring them somewhere where you're not stressed. That's very important. Kids pick up on that. Let them do what they like when they're there. Have a bit of fun. If they want to hit one shot, two shots, 10 shots, play in the bunker, look in the water, whatever they want to do, let them do. And generally bring them home before they get tired. So the best thing you can do with a kid early on in golf is say, hey, we have to go home. And don't wait till they're tired and hate it. Wait till when they're actually enjoying themselves. Go home. And the last thing I would say, and this has nothing to do with being a competitive player, it's about the love of the game. When you're finished, take 10 minutes to spend with your son or daughter and go and have a Coke, a Pepsi this week. Go and have a Pepsi in the bar, wherever it is, and sit there, have an ice cream and spend 10, 15 minutes. Because if they have that 15 minutes alone time with you, just you and them, for the rest of their life, every time they play golf, they remember the 15 minutes they had with their father or mother. And that's what keep bringing them back to golf for the next. And remember, these kids will play golf for 90 years. They'll be there's a good chance my kids will be playing when they're 100. So, like, it's a long career. And if every time they play golf, it's bringing that happy memory of when they were a kid and they just got a bit of alone time, a bit of quiet time, a bit of big boy time, you know, where they're sitting there in the clubhouse and enjoying it. So it's very important. Stress-free environment. Don't bring them to the nice country club. That's no use and makes them soft anyway. Bring them out there. You know, all the players on tour, I guarantee you, we had nothing else to do in our summers. We were thrown out, go to the golf course, and we played 45 holes a day, and it was something to do. Having too many options also won't make them want to play golf, you know. So, you know, it's nice when in the summertime that's the kids all go out, they cycle up to the golf course, whatever, and then they just spend the whole day there. That's another way kids will get to love the game. And remember, it's unlikely if your kid gets good at the game, that doesn't necessarily make them love the game. If your kid loves the game, it's likely that they'll become good at it. It's the love should be first. And it's even more important to get a love of the game, because we all know you plateau when you play golf. There's many plateaus where it really gets frustrating. And if you don't love it, those plateaus are going to stop you playing. You're going to give up. Whereas if you love it, you'll go through anything. So try and get the love of the game for the kids first. Don't make... They'll figure out how to play great golf. Kids are brilliant. They'll figure it out. You don't need to be teaching your kids how to play golf. You need to be ensuring that they're in an environment that they just love the game, and then they'll start asking questions.
As our resident Shooter McGavin in the room, Coops, we've gone the golf side of things, obviously, and we have spoken a bit the love of the game in particular, but also got a child. How do you find the balance of when you have to be the parent versus when you just get to do something you love doing that she loves doing at the same time?
Yeah, we're actually in the midst of trying to make golf more of a family activity at the
moment.
Is
that right?
Funny enough. Yeah. Yeah.
Selfish motives by any chance?
You know what? This was really driven by my wife. So I'm kind of reaping the benefits at the moment. We'll see how long it lasts.
Not fighting back, though.
No, definitely not. No, I'm actually playing Thursday. So it'll be like I'll play around into the grand final game. So that's going to be a nice day off for me. But there's so many good things in there. So many good things. I immediately started thinking about my VJBL career, and I could hardly tell you what it was like or basketball memories, but something that I do remember was the time spent with my dad in the car, you know, talking about football or basketball or hearing about his work. And that was our time. That was our time. That's where we, you know, we spent a lot of time together in the car over my basketball journey, and we built a really strong bond there where, you know, he's my best friend. So, you know, I couldn't agree more that the importance of taking those moments to enjoy with your child the aspect of sport, because again, those are the things they're going to remember. They're not going to remember, you know, how well they hit the ball. They're going to remember that time spent together. And we've spoken about the love piece. You know, we've spoken about the love piece. Just to bring it back to coaching, I think, you know, leaving them wanting more is such a great message. You know, when you're talking about going to a session or, you know, there's those moments where athletes go down to the gym to shoot and spend like 4 or 5 hours down there, you know, in a day. And that's great. And it's, you know, you love the game and you're kind of down there, but then you can see a lot athletes get frustrated. I was down at the courts for 5 hours, yet the next game I didn't shoot that well. Yeah, because you're not practicing, you're not getting to a level of discomfort, you're not getting to a level of you know, practice that's needed. You're just kind of milling about. So an understanding of, you know, when is it hard? When do I leave? How do I keep the spark going? How do I make sure I understand when am I training to be better and when am I just kind of mucking around with basketball? But, yeah, there's heaps of stuff in there and, yeah, I mean, if we want to talk golf, like, let's go.
It's a whole separate pod.
Yeah. the Sunderland Golf Pod. Yeah. Yeah.
Zoe, what about you?
I really enjoy the sort of tapping into that nostalgia piece. And I think that's why we talk about so much why the car ride is so important. Because if that car ride home in particular, or to the game, if that's filled with stress and pressure and negativity, and then that's what they're going to remember their time with you and with the sport. That's what they're going to remember. So it's, you know, one of the things we tell parents all the time when we're about to go away for nationals, like we are now, and it's going to be tough for some kids. Some kids aren't going to play, or they're certainly not going to play what they're used to playing. And they go to their parents, and that's where it generally gets worse because they feel comfortable to show their emotion around their parents and all those sort of things, which we don't want to try and take away. But some of the tools we try and arm the parents with are, you know, ask them questions non-basketball related, or tell them things like, hey, I love what you're doing for your team. You know, okay, you're not playing the minutes that you want to play, but, you know, you're on the bench, you're cheering louder than anyone, you're backing everyone up. Like, I love watching you do that. And so that just takes that added layer of, you know, I don't know, stress or embarrassment, I guess, away, and just sort of starts focusing on, regardless of your role, what's the good that can come from that. So I think that real piece of, you know, don't make it pressure filled. Don't make it all about, especially if you've got a little bit of knowledge, don't make it all about coaching them in the car. Just, you know, if they get in the car and say, hey, are we going to Macca's? Like, yep, we're going to Macca's, or what, whatever. Like, just move on from the game. If they want to talk about it, fine, but, you know, try and keep it more positive based. And I think you probably will see better things with your relationship as well, particularly if you're a parent coach.
Yep.
I know that's a really hard space to be in. And so if you can, you know, try and shift it away from the game as soon as you get in that car, or even going to the game, I think it'll be, like, do really good things for your relationship.
I really love the leave when they're enjoying it still.
Yeah.
It's, you want that lasting memory to be a positive one, not, I was getting sick of that, thank God we're going.
Yeah.
You want it to be, oh, we have to leave? Yeah. When do we get to come back?
Yeah.
Like, it's, and it's the same with our training sessions when we provide to our kids. Like, test them. If it's easy, they'll walk away from it. Make it hard. Not too hard that they never achieve success, but just, you know, a little bit of a carrot that they just keep inching closer towards, I think is a really valuable
and
one.
A sign of that is when a really cool thing you listen out for is when you say, okay, you know, bring it in because the session's ended, and you hear someone go, oh, that went really quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's a really good sign. Like, you've nailed it.
Absolutely. All right, we're on to our last one because I've just realised the time yet again. Sandy Brondell. So, was asked this in a press conference after a game. Was sitting next to Brianna Stewart at the time. I'm not sure if you'll be able to hear the question come through, but it is along the lines of, was what you ran what you drew up, and why didn't you go to Sabrina Ionescu for the last shot of the game?
Hi, everybody. Sorry for the loss there. Just a quick question. Two parts. Part A is, how did the play that you drew up, was that similar or different to the play that actually ended up happening? And B, why not put the ball in the hands of Sabrina Ionescu in that possession? Thank you.
Okay, good question. But I put the ball in the hands of the MVP because we trust her. And it just didn't work out today. So obviously Sabrina and her were in the action, but it ended up with Brianna at the end. So it was just her trying to make a play from there. So, you know, that's, I think I still do it again. I still make that's the right call.
One, way to put her on the spot, sitting next to Brianna Stewart, and say, hey, why did you go to her and not someone else? But two, who in the world suggests that you don't go to Stewart at the end of a game as well? Like, that's, and look, she handled that question perfectly. Yeah. And, you know, Sandy's phenomenal, obviously, a WNBA coach, Opal's coach, all that sort of stuff aside. She answered that one perfectly because she didn't throw anyone under the bus. She didn't say, well, you know, Stewie should have made the shot. There was none of that. It's like, well, those two were in the action. That's simply what unfolded. You can't predict everything as a coach, but she sits there and says, well, I'll do it again. So if you're the player sitting next to her, it's like, well, good, coach has got my back. Straight away, I thought she handled that perfectly.
Well, and it's that, you know, if it works, you're a genius. If it doesn't, then you're criticised. And unfortunately, again, that's the mindset shift we'd love to change. But, yeah, if again, I would question, obviously, if she made that play and she made that shot.
So we're starting to point at the podcast. Yeah. You know,
I'm starting to get annoyed. Yeah. but if she'd made that shot, are you still going to ask if the ball should have gone to Sabrina? No. Like, it's not going to happen. So, yeah, I think she absolutely handled it perfectly. And it'd be great if we stopped asking questions like that.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's not going to be the case.
No,
as
never.
As we know, I think probably a little bit of a message, especially to coaches that are seeing that they're developing a career and maybe have some longevity in the sport, is that you're going to get those questions your whole career. You're going to get them from the under 12 parent, the questions why you ran that play. You're going to get it from your HBC at a nationals, why did you run that play? You're going to get it in the WNBA from a reporter, why are you going to run that play? So building on what you guys have spoken about, you know, backing your athletes, having really good understanding of your why, you know, what you want to do in those moments, being able to breathe and process before answering questions. Did you need to answer it at all? And just having that awareness, that understanding and that strategy around, you know, sometimes I've just got to be able to rise above, quote unquote, a stupid question, to give answers and help people feel better about if it's their job to ask, or if it's a parent, so it's their response, you know, they feel like it's their responsibility to ask. And just try and do what's best for everybody, you know, especially your athletes.
Excellent. All right, we're into book club.
I have many leather-bound books, and my apartment smells of rich mahogany.
No, the funny part is the music started playing and Zoe like went pale, pale white. Like, was
more so than usual.
Was I supposed to read a book for this week? No, you weren't. I would have given you some warning. Yeah. Next time we're on the pod, we are coming to you on this. I will pre-warn you now.
Do audiobooks count?
Yes, they do.
Okay, well, that's a world I could get on board. I drive a lot.
Okay, so I'm on for book club this week. So the book I'm going with is The 5 AM Club. So Robin Sharma. It is largely around those that know me well enough will know I am a morning person. This sunny disposition happens from the very first moment of the day, as opposed to having to warm into it. Zoe, unfortunately, is not necessarily the same way, but that's okay too. It's she's a PM person, as it turns out. But the 5 AM Club was something, it's a little bit hyperbolic, I suppose, in a way that it doesn't have to be 5 AM. I'm just an early morning person in general. Whenever I wake up, I wake up and that's fine. But it is largely around that first hour of the day, having a victory hour, which is splitting into 20, 20 and 20. So 20 minutes of move, 20 minutes of reflect, 20 minutes of growth. So I get more done in the first hour of my day than I probably do in the 4 hours directly following that, because it's usually when the rest of the world has woken up as well and has started to blow up my phone or my email or whatever the case may be on just, you know, work, life, those types of things as well. So I find that first hour of the day, I can kind of tune out to everything else going on, go for a walk, have a read of something, just do a little bit of reflection. I'm like, okay, what do I need to get done? Where am I going with this? So those types of things. I find that to be really valuable for me for that first hour of the day. So it's about building repeatable habits more than anything else. I know if I have a couple of weeks where my sleep cycle is out, and I have late nights or later mornings, I find it really hard to get back into that early morning wake up in particular. So for me, I need something that's really repeatable, and I find that early morning is a really good one. Goes into routine and solitude, like the time on your own in particular. I really actually enjoy that time on my own. Apologies.
back at you, dude.
Yeah. Zoe'd rather have the extra hour sleeping as well, so she's good with it. So, but it is that sort of thing. I do enjoy the time bomb. Like, you are more likely to get a reply text message from me at 6 a.m. than 6 p.m. Like, it's just one of those things, because that's just how it sort of works out. Once I've done all that, okay, now I'm ready to start the day, whereas I get to the other end of the day, I'm just gassed. And, you know, I'm checked out early.
Because you got up too early.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You're tired.
Not necessarily. You maybe looked at this with the wrong lens in particular. But it is really about the four sets they talk about. So mindset, heart set, soul set, and health set. So it's a really interesting book on that end. It's a little bit preachy at times. I did find sort of reading through it, it's like, yeah, okay, I'll maybe skip this chapter a little bit. So I've maybe not quite got the entire view on the whole thing. But talk about like the lifelong learning, the delayed gratification, those types of things in particular. I really enjoyed the book, but it has changed how I function a little bit too, because I am an early morning person. I've got a real, I enjoy getting up before the sun's up in particular. So it was like, yeah, that's my first win for the day. I beat the sun. So, you know, what else could possibly go wrong from this point here? You know, it's all upwards, so to speak. So that would be my recommendation, 5 a.m. Club by Robin Sharma. So that's my recommendation. Zoe, we already know you're not a morning person. Coops, what are you?
You're
a kid, so you're a bit of whatever comes.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, you beat me to it. Yeah, it's like whatever I can get at the moment. So, yeah, we'll see. I used to be morning, then I was evening.
It changes regularly.
See what the future holds. Yeah.
It could be anything. Coaches, that is us for a little bit now. So we will be back mid-May. There might be something that comes out a little bit early, depending on how we're going with schedules and those types of things. But that is us off for a couple of weeks. Enjoy the break. I know you largely get 2 weeks off. Those of you that are travelling to tournaments and those types of things over the Easter weekend, obviously safe travels. And we will catch you on the pod when we're back.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.